Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another special edition of the Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, CONCACAF Nations League postgame show. The United States down at the Cayman Islands to take on Cuba because of just reason why, because their national stadium in Havana is under refurbishment or renovations. So that's why both home games for Cuba were played in the Cayman Islands at a little regular school stadium, I guess, that they were able to do this. So a 4-0 destruction by the U.S. men's national team as they go out and not only get the necessary 3 points to get tied on points with Canada, but the goal differential, of course, helps them out tremendously as they move on and move on into the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals, where they will take on Honduras. And meanwhile, on the other side of the bracket, even though it's just a formality that they have to play this match, Mexico will take on Costa Rica on that side of the bracket. And this will be in June, in the June window of 2020. So basically, for the U.S., there's an opportunity to go into the final, possibly taking on Mexico or Costa Rica, depending on how that one plays out. So it's been very, very interesting to watch. It has been a fun time to watch these games being played. And as we go ahead and take a look at this one, all you can really say is that the United States looked like the better side, of course. Now, you score 3 goals in the first half. You get into the second half, you expect a lull. I mean, obviously, Cuba is not a strong opponent. We all know this. You had to put at least more than 1 or 2 goals past this island nation in Cuba that, A, we don't know anything about these players. We don't know anything about how strong these players are. We have no idea, what league they are involved in. You know, the Cubans do have a league, a soccer league of their own that's considered first division, where they're getting regular playing time and everything. We don't know about these players because, once again, it's under a communist regime, under the Castro family. So we don't know that much about them unless some of them legally transfer to any clubs in the United States or, as the old saying goes, depending on how many Cubans are going to defect to the United States whenever there's a Gold Cup tournament. So right there and then, that's the situation that you have. And, of course, all you can say is that job done, mission accomplished, great goals scored by both Jordan Morris and Josh Sargent. Both men getting all 4 goals, 2 for Morris, 2 for Sargent, and all you can say is that this is the necessary things that you needed the U.S. to do. Score goals as much as possible, as many as possible, to not only separate themselves in this matchup against Cuba, but at the same time, the goal differential separating them from Canada. Pardon me. So as we take a look now, and of course it is officially confirmation about what the United States has done. As we go ahead, we type in the situation. The third win for the United States, the fourth loss for Cuba, 15 goals. Or probably going to be more than that. Hold on 1 second, so I'll make sure I get it done the right way. Pardon me, 18 goals for the United States. And all you can say is for the United States, that is. The differential is a plus 15 for the United States, and it is a plus 6 for Canada. So all they really needed after the goals, basically, was the victory. Once the goals were in place, the victory really had to shine. And that's the one thing I think, you know, with this national team now, they had to learn how to win. They had to learn not so much the emotion of being, you know, getting stuck into these games. It's not just the emotional part. It's the learning part as well. And I think that's the one thing. I know everyone was watching the match against Canada on Friday night when they were down at Explora Stadium in Orlando, how, you know, Greg Berhalter said he didn't do a good job or didn't do enough to get his players emotionally invested into the match. It's not just about emotion. I mean, obviously you have to have emotion to play this game. I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's a no-doubter. But you've got to have them learn how to win. You have to instill that into their system. You have to have that to go forward. It's just not just emotion by itself. And it's not just technical ability by itself. It's everything. And I've said this many, many times, is that you got to have your head screwed on right to go out on the pitch and to attack your opponent, and then you'll find success. But even if you don't find success, at least you can say to yourself, I went out there and I competed and I did well. Was it our day? No. But at least I went out there and I did my best and I tried my best to get a victory, help get a victory for my country, for my nation, for American soccer, and go out there and do the job that I know that I can do. And as of right now, all I can say is that this is a job well done. This is a great job by these players. And, you know, Jordan Morris, my goodness, you know, what a monster season he had for both club and country, you might have to say, when he finally was out there. Had great goal scoring for the Seattle Sounders, of course helping winning the MLS Cup, pardon me, this past November 10th against Toronto FC. But how he converted his goals in these two matches in the Nations League. How he went out there and converted chances. Unbelievable how he was able to convert these chances. Just, you know, wonderful stuff from Jordan Morris, how he went out there, and it was just wonderful to see. We'll open the phone lines, of course, if you are listening live, 646-929-1823. Go ahead and give a call. Give me your opinion as this ends officially the calendar year for the U.S. Soccer Federation when it comes to official matches for both the men and the women. And in this November, it's been pretty damn good so far. And all you can say is that in this situation, they finish it off with a flourish. Did a great job of doing what they need to do and doing it very good, solid. And once again, you cannot come into this match. If you're watching this match against Cuba, you cannot give them an opportunity to go out and sneak a couple of goals past you. Cannot. You cannot allow them to get it past you. Cannot. Because that will be the death of this match. And that'll be the death of going into the semifinals of the CONCACAF Nations League in June. Now, so far, all you can say is that, you know, with this group, it's been absolutely fantastic to get this whole situation, you know, done. And at the same time, all you can really say is that, you know, you had to go out there, and you had to perform at your best, and that's what the United States did. Joining me right now from World Soccer Talk, it is Kartik Krishnayar, watching this matchup. And Kartik, you know, once again, the United States, they came out, they had a job to do, they did it, and all you can say is job well done in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Berhalter has turned things around. All the self-anointed experts about the sport in this country who were piling on him for the last couple months, they have to shut up and sit down for a couple months now. He really proved everybody wrong in his last two matches.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm saying, what more can you say? I mean, there's a system, there's a process. A lot of American writers, a lot of people cover the sport in this country, again, are showing in their critiques of Berhalter, much like they did in their critiques of Arena, their critiques of Klinsmann, et cetera. But they just really don't get the broader perspective. So, I come here to praise Berhalter, not to bury him.
Oh, no. I mean, look, I'll admit it. I don't think I buried him. I know that I probably, cited a couple of issues, from him. But I think he's learned from it. And that's what you want from a head coach, especially a head coach who's never managed an international game. Because you're not having a couple of different – it's the different personalities. They're not all coming from different countries, with the exception of maybe Dest, you know, who's actually Dutch. He's from the Netherlands, and, you know, his father is born in the United States. So at least, you know, he can get the understanding of what Berhalter wants. But at the same time, you know, when you're a national team head coach, whatever ideas you have, and, you know, I'm not saying Berhalter's not trying to have his ideas, but the point is that sometimes when you're not having your own ideas work, sometimes you just have to throw out the kitchen sink and make adjustments. Just to, you know, if you want to say dumb it down, fine. But so far, I think he's learned a lot in these last couple of months. And he's now finally understanding what he needs to do. Is he still going to try to put his own spin on it? Absolutely. But still, though, you want to see him grow and really become the head coach for this national team that everybody wants him to be.
Yeah, but he was We've spent a long time criticizing the selection process, the interview process, the so-called search. My preference all along was for Jesse Marsh to get the job. It wasn't going to be Jesse Marsh. I was hoping that a guy like Osorio would be looked at, maybe Peter Vermees, maybe one or two other managers. I'm not someone who believes the U.S. should have hired Tata Martino, by the way, but that's a whole other issue. But the U.S. hired Greg Berhalter ostensibly to try and change the style and implement a much more fluid passing, if you want to call it Dutch style. So I think my point has been the last several months, the results really don't matter. Now, if you're judging him based on results, clearly the results have not been good enough until this November break. So these last two matches, you could still argue it's Cuba and Canada. So maybe we haven't seen anything. I saw someone tweet correctly the other day that Jurgen Klinsmann was sacked for losing to Costa Rica, much better than Canada. That Bob Riley was sacked for losing to Mexico, much better than Canada. So Berhalter got through a loss against Canada and did not get sacked. Now, I would also point out that Jurgen Klinsmann had lost to Guatemala and somehow survived that. And lost to Jamaica on home soil and somehow survived that. But I think it's a process, right? It isn't about the results per se. That having been said, these last two results have been very good. And the U.S. has done it without Christian Pulisic. He was playing very well at Chelsea, but I'm not sure what his mindset is when he comes to the national team, right? They've done it now without
–
had to play without Tyler Adams for a long time. Not sure what his mindset's going to be when he goes back to the national team. So it's interesting because I think what you've seen is Jordan Morris has consistently been pretty good. Pulisic, when he played for the U.S., has been consistently pretty good. And then you have a bunch of guys that have been hit or miss other than that going forward. So Sargent was good today. Can he be consistently good? I believe he can be. I mean, when I've watched him at Werder Bremen this season, he's done everything but score goals. So his hold-up play is really good. He runs the channels well. He reads the game well. Hasn't scored as many goals as he'd like a number 9 to score, but he's getting there, right? He's had a few now. And has been really important in their build-up play. So that was positive. And then I think, look, it's going to be really interesting to see with Death having committed to the U.S. and now having been captized. So he's going to be playing for the U.S. for the rest of his career. There's no going back on this. How does this affect DeAndre Yedlin? DeAndre Yedlin has been very, very good at Newcastle this season since he came back from an injury. He was pretty good most of last season. End of last season wasn't as good, but most of last season he was good. The year before he was pretty good. Yet in that period, he's never been good for the U.S. So the Premier League, which a lot of people consider the best league in the world, Yedlin is consistently holding down the starting position and pretty consistently playing well. Yet when he comes to the U.S. team, he's mistake-prone. So, I wanted to praise Berhalter, but maybe I'm going back on this a little bit now that we're talking about it, Daniel. There's a I don't know if there's a cultural thing with the U.S. team when these guys come in. They're used to certain environments, but just take the other one, for example, used to a certain environment, used to a certain structure, comes to the U.S. camp. It's not what he's accustomed to in the Premier League, and he doesn't play well. Goes back to England, plays really well. I mean, it was stunning to see the bookends last month. Yedlin had a really good game against Manchester United, really good game. I think probably best player on the pitch in that game. And by the way, he looks a lot better consistently for Newcastle. I know he plays a very different position, but looks much better than Miguel Almiron, who was the best player in MLS a few years ago. Then comes comes here, plays for the U.S. against Canada. It's horrible. Goes back. I forgot who Newcastle played in the next game. It was Chelsea. Yeah. One of the best teams in the league. One of the best teams in Europe. And he had a blinder again. So I just wonder about the culture. When we see it with Pulisic now, Pulisic is playing very well for Chelsea. There have been times he's played very well for Dortmund and come to the U.S. and just not played well. So maybe that's been solved. Maybe these two wins change that, and people then get excited about coming and playing for the U.S.
And that's what I was about to say. I mean, I was thinking, because when DeAndre Yedlin was given a chance at Brazil in 2014, he played great under Klinsmann. Maybe,
yeah.
And like I said before, you know, I don't want to go to say, you know, soccer for dummies or anything like that. But the truth is, sometimes maybe you have to dumb it down. I mean, I know you're not a big fan of like NFL and American football and everything, but sometimes a head coach can over teach a playbook to his quarterback. And so the quarterback is looking to his coach saying, well, maybe we can take a couple of these plays out and maybe we can dumb it down a little bit so maybe I can be a little more successful because I'm comfortable with that play call,
Let me give you a better example because Yedlin's a fullback.
Oh.
So fullback position is just like playing corner in college football or the NFL. Or it's like playing, and then you think of your center back as safety. okay? Think about the way a corner can be overcoached, saying, okay, you have to be aggressive and go for interceptions, try and jump pass routes. You have safety help, so you jump a route and you try and get an interception and make a big play and get a turnover. Yedlin with the U.S. seems to do that a lot, where he's jumping out, he's trying to cut off passing lanes, assuming he'll have a center back to cover him, and the center back isn't there. He does it at Newcastle, and he has center back cover. So I think, actually, you make a great analogy bringing up American football in reference to DeAndre Yedlin. It's not the quarterback that just trying to look at it. It's being a corner. And let's say he's the right corner. And he's covering the fastest receiver on the team. And he thinks he has safety help, and he doesn't, right? And he keeps jumping routes and getting burned.
Exactly.
Touchdowns. Receivers getting behind him.
Exactly.
Scoring. So that's it's actually a great analogy.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, you know, you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to, like, you know, overstimulate and overdo all these, you know, plays and the style. Because to me, it feels like that if you put too much into your players and at the same time you put them out of position, then, you know, what are you trying to do? I mean, you're trying to overcomplicate the situation when you don't have the players, which honestly, I don't think our players are meant to be built the way that I think Greg Berhalter is trying to do it. Now, he may still, you know, he can still keep some parts of his system, but in reality, like I've said in the past, you know, this is a national team. You're going to have to throw out the kitchen sink and just throw something at the wall to make sure it sticks, because that at times is the only way your national team is going to get the necessary results, that you might have to do more pressing. You might have to be, you know, simplify what you need to do to get out there. And in this match against Cuba, and once again, you know, it's a minnow in this confederation. We don't know their players. We don't know how strong they are. We don't know how technically sound they are. You know, they're probably more of a mystery within this confederation than maybe, you know, Azerbaijan in Europe, you know, because nobody knows what goes on in Azerbaijan. We don't even know if they have a league. Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, I think the thing with Cuba also is that you just never know what the mindset of the players are, because, look, I mean, in my career as a press officer for lower division clubs and lower division leagues in the U.S., I've dealt with a lot of Cuban defectors and have had, I don't know, I'm thinking between Miami FC, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, and General NASL, had to deal with 8 or 9 Cuban defectors. And when I'm talking about defectors, I'm talking about national team players, high-level players. That's not to mention even guys like Ozzy Alonso, who are even at a higher level, and defected and became arguably the best holding midfielder in Major League Soccer, one of the best holding midfielders in the history of the league. So you don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know what the mindset of the player is going to be when you play Cuba. All you can do is go out and perform. This having been said, I think what's going to be really interesting for the U.S. going forward is, now that they're in the Nations League semifinals, there's a good chance of playing Mexico. And because of that, we will get a real indication of where the U.S. is. A lot of other people were very down on the U.S.'s performance in the Gold Cup final against Mexico. I wasn't. I actually thought the U.S. was very good for 45 minutes, but Tata made some tactical changes with Berhalter. Again, Berhalter being a stylist, not being a very pragmatic manager, wasn't going to make. But I think for the first half, the U.S.
exactly.
was very good. I would actually go on record
mm-hmm.
saying the U.S. was better in that first half against Mexico than they'd been in any of the Dos Acero matches. I know that's a very controversial opinion, but people should go back and watch those matches and see that the U.S. scored, did a lot of their damage on counterattacks. Maybe the one exception was the game in 2005 in Columbus. Stevie Ralston scored and DeMarcus Beasley scored, but for the most part, the U.S. Wouldn't come out and take the game to Mexico. And we certainly did in the first half of that match. So I'd like to see that matchup again. Obviously, the match in September in Nashville was, or wherever it was in Nashville? I think it was in Nashville. No, that was last year. Wherever it was, last month, 2 months ago, was an embarrassment of epic proportions. And I'm hoping that that was rock bottom and the U.S. is pivoting away from that low point.
No, absolutely. And that's what we have to hope for, because we cannot have we can't have this lull come back ever again, you know. And once again, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, Berhalter, as I've said, I think he's learning more about being a national team coach than being, you know, a club coach, because you're not managing each and every weekend, each and every week, in every, like, 6 to 8 months. You're not in the playoffs. You have your FIFA windows. You have your two match days. You get, you know, the players that you call in. They come into camp for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden they go into the matches, and then they got to travel to another location, whether it's within the U.S. or with another country, whether it's this confederation or in South America or in Europe, depending on where it's going to be. And, you know, I think that's the thing that Berhalter needs to learn, and I think he's now learning it. And now the club – I shouldn't say the club, but the U.S. is now getting better. And here's the thing. When Greg Berhalter was hired, that's not his fault that it was only him that they were looking at. Sure, they called Oscar Pereja to come over to interview because they had to show, well, we're having a hiring process. It's only him,
right.
Unfortunately. That's more the board. That's more the U.S. Soccer Federation's fault than Greg Berhalter's fault, because I don't blame him at all for that. I blame U.S. Soccer for the hiring process that was not truly there. That's all I blame them for. All you can do is critique what the head coach is doing, what he sees, you know, in the players he's choosing for the national team, the players that are performing on the pitch, and are you getting the necessary results? And sometimes, unfortunately, Kardik, sometimes when you have a Gold Cup tournament coming over, when you have, you know, now this CONCACAF Nations League is a part of the FIFA calendar now, you know, you're going to be scrutinized because these are results that matter. Even though they say, you know, we're trying to get our guys, you know, emotionally involved, but sometimes, you know, results doesn't matter. Well, that's friendlies.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess it's a little bit of a different challenge because in at this point in 2011, the U.S. was playing friendlies. At this point in 2015, they were playing sub-hex qualifiers, which are competitive matches, but the U.S. always gets through the sub-hex round. Although they made it a little more interesting this past time than didn't make it through the hex, obviously, after that. But this time you're playing more competitive matches, or at least the Canada matches have been more competitive than you typically play in the sub-hex round. So I think it's a little bit and the U.S. is coming off missing a World Cup, unlike in the past when the U.S. would be coming off generally not only qualifying for a World Cup, but winning the hex and then advancing to the knockout stage of the World Cup. So it's just our perspectives are very different. It's tough historically to draw parallels, because the U.S. just has not been in this position since we really started taking the sport seriously, ever. And you can say, oh, well, 1985 or 89 before Calgary scored the goal down Port of Spain. But no one was taking – we didn't spend this kind of resources. We didn't have attention on the sport. We didn't have a good domestic league. We didn't have guys playing in the top league in Europe, right? So it's completely they're not analogous situations. So I wanted to cut Berhalter some slack because of this, Daniel. I just think it's not his fault, right? It is U.S. Soccer's fault, the way the hiring process is done, and he was the beneficiary, but it wasn't his fault. He's not the one who said, hey, don't interview anyone else, just give me the job.
Exactly.
And he inherited, he inherited a bad team. He inherited a team that was at a low point. So hopefully now we're pulling out of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, absolutely. And that's all I'm saying. And I agree. I think that, you know, all you can do is worry about Greg Berhalter, the players he picks for the national team, his tactics, the formation, pardon me, and, you know, just to go forward and try and get the necessary results. And when you don't, and you see a lot of disjointedness, and you see a lot of, you know, not necessarily going after it like you think they should, then you can definitely point to Greg saying, well, you know, you got out-coached, you know, you got this, you got that. But you know what? He turned it around. And I understand Canada, you know, look, I understand Canada. I know you have to get going soon, but let me just say this before you go. I'll give you the last word. But with Canada, you know, they have every right to play for results as well, regardless of how long it's been since they got a victory against the United States. They have every right to fight for the 3 points, to fight for a victory, whether it's at BMO Field, Stade Saputo in Montreal, BMO Field in Toronto, or at the BC Place in Vancouver, or any other soccer stadium they're going to choose to play in Canada. They have every right at home or on the road to earn the full 3 points and to put them in a position to get to either, you know, CONCACAF Nations League semifinal, a CONCACAF Nations League win in the group stage, World Cup qualifier, or even getting qualifying for the World Cup and then playing in the World Cup itself. I mean, they have every right to go in there and do whatever they have to do. Yes, we are the big, bad USA. We are supposed to be us and Mexico, the big, bad two sides in this confederation. Yet, Mexico nearly slipped if it wasn't for, you know, the U.S. Leveling and then beating Panama in that final hexagonal qualifier to get into Brazil 2014. And then it took a new head coach to put Mexico through the international playoff to qualify for the World Cup itself. Yet it took this World Cup qualifying cycle for Russia, for the United States to fall flat on their face, and we got no help from anybody else because people wanted us knocked out, you know, whatever they say. But, you know, Canada had every right to fight for 3 points, whether you liked it or not. They had the same right like the United States does. And the U.S. finally turned things around. It took them these two matches in the CONCACAF Nations League in Group A, League A, to now get into the semifinals.
Yeah, and very, very encouraging sign that the U.S. is in the semifinals. The U.S. wins the Nations League. No one's going to remember the loss in Canada.
Toronto.
Look, no one remembers the loss. No one remembers the loss in Jamaica when the U.S. qualified for the 2014 World Cup and then advanced to the knockout stages. No one remembered the struggles the U.S. had in a couple of the qualifiers in 2009, falling behind Honduras in Chicago, falling behind El Salvador in Salt Lake City, I think it was, having come back and win that game, struggling to beat Trinidad after they were already eliminated. Although, I mean, we would learn 8 years later, Trinidad's already eliminated. It's still pretty dangerous. But at that time, you know, coming from behind or struggling to beat them, right after they fired their manager.
Yep. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you don't remember the terrible losses in World Cup qualifying until you officially qualify for the World Cup. Ah, that didn't happen. You know, it happened, but you know what? It's insignificant. We are now through to the World Cup. We're in the World Cup. We didn't have to go through international playoff against the World Cup. We're in. It's okay. That team got eliminated. That team got eliminated. We're in. It's not a big deal. Where I've always stressed this, Carp, and I know I got to get going, but let me just say this. I always stress this. If you're supposed to be a power in this confederation, and now that you're up at the top and you're sharing that top with Mexico, you have to make sure that when you play these to other teams below you, whether it's in Central America, whether it's in the Caribbean, whether it is Canada, you got to make sure on your end of this situation that you don't get knocked off the top of the mountain. And that's what Trinidad and Tobago did. Not only did they knock off the U.S. off the top of the mountain to not qualify for the World Cup in Russia last year in the summer, but they got revenge for the Caligiuri goal that knocked them out of the World Cup to get into 1990.
Yeah, right, correct. So that's absolutely right. That's the situation. That's what the U.S. has to deal with and overcome in the future.
Yep. Exactly. Absolutely. All right. So, look, I know you got to get going, and I appreciate you as always coming on, and I'll talk to you on Friday along with Robert Hay, and we're going to have Chris Kessel on as well, as we're going to talk about a very important topic that I think needs to be discussed. I try to discuss all levels, but as you know, Kartik, I'm having an issue with our youth national teams right now, especially from this past Under-17 World Cup. Can't wait to talk to you on Friday. And thank you very much. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. Take care.
Take care. And that is Kartik Krishnire from World Soccer Talk, as we're talking about this post-match show. The United States getting a 4-0 victory over Cuba. You know, that opening goal was strange. Josh Sargent finding a way to barrel into the net along with the ball. In 34 seconds into the match. And all you can say is that, you know, if that ball does not go in, I mean, I don't know how much longer they were able to not score or get that opening goal, but they did. And that's the best thing of all. They got that opening goal. They went forward. They were able to take care of business, and they did so. So, once again, the United States doing a hell of a job, a bang-bang job, of getting the necessary goals. Second goal, great, great pass to Jordan Morris. That was from Weston McKinney, who found Jordan Morris all by himself, one-on-one with the keeper, waited for the keeper to make a move. He did so. Jordan Morris pounded it past him to make it 2-0 in the 26th minute. And then Jordan Morris, assisted by Aaron Long, let's be honest, if Jordan Morris was not there, that ball was going to bounce past the keeper after it took a weird deflection off of a Cuban, took a weird deflection, and it landed behind the keeper. And there's Jordan Morris all by himself. He does what he's supposed to do. You know, you're a striker. You're a goal scorer. Punch it in. 3-0 U.S. in the 39th minute. And just Josh Sargent on a nice cross by Tyler Boyd. And, of course, he took it one time, and he buried it to make it 4-0 in the 66th minute. And so at the end of everything, the United States getting the necessary goals and getting the 3 points, leveling on points with Canada, but a better goal differential pushed the United States into the semifinals against Honduras, which will be in June. And we'll wait for that schedule when it comes out later, maybe towards the end of this year, maybe closer to when we get to June or close to June, and we get over there to talk to, to discuss this CONCACAF Nations League semifinals. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call the night tonight. Join me, of course, this coming Friday, along with Robert Hay, Chris Kessel, and Kartik Krishnire will rejoin us again as we'll talk about the youth national teams as we get ready to discuss. I think it's an early problem right now. I think it's an early problem of our youth national teams, and we'll talk more about that on Friday. But once again, I want to thank my guest, as always, Kartik Krishnire from World Soccer Talk, as we discuss this 4-0 victory over the United States. Yes, there's still some problems with this team, with no doubt. I think there's too many unforced errors at times, but as I say, you get the win. Doesn't matter how pretty or ugly you do it. Win is a win is a win. So once again, this is Daniel Feuerstein, Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Final score once again, United States 4, Cuba 0 at the Cayman Islands as they advance to win Group A in League A of the CONCACAF Nations League. They will be facing Honduras in the semifinals in June. Have a good evening. Take care. So long. Bye-bye for now. And as always, please, enjoy your football. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now.